Welcome back to the FKT podcast. I'm your host, Heather Anderson. Today I'm joined by Jameson Hatt, who set the unsupported FKT for Wisconsin's Ice Age Trail, completing the 1,100 plus mile long trail in 30 days, 8 hours, and 59 minutes. Jameson, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I'm really excited to chat with you about your FKT.
Thanks so much for having me.
The first question I have is, are you caught up on your sleep yet?
I was actually caught up on my sleep almost right away because I kind of slept a lot on trail.
Okay. All right.
Except I guess every other night I was having trouble sleeping because of the pain and stuff. So, but yeah, I'm good with my sleep now. Yeah.
I'd love it if you just started out by, because I feel like if you're not in the long distance community or you're not from the Midwest, you probably haven't heard of the Ice Age Trail. So could you talk about what the trail is, where it's at, describe what it's like for us?
Yeah, it's in Wisconsin. It works out to be about 1,160 miles long. That's what's on Far Out anyway. And that's about the actual mileage I probably got. I would say, I guess I chose it because it's pretty similar to Ontario, where I live. Lots of forest, lots of good climbs, but nothing sustained, no real mountains, marshland. You kind of get a mix of everything. And it crosses the whole state and it goes kind of west to east to west, but it also heads south and gets kind of down through some of the populated parts of the states, goes around Madison, then comes back up. So yeah, it's a good mix of everything, but nothing too crazy.
Is it predominantly single track, road, bike path? What are we walking on here?
Okay, so what is single track is really, really nice. So that's great. And there's just miles and miles of it. There's a lot of wider track. There's a lot of cross-country ski, which I guess you'd call double track, but it's even wider. Like there's a ton of those type of trails as well.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You get the odd farmer's field and stuff like that to connect. And then of course you do have a lot of road as well, which is a big part of it. I don't know exactly how much, but it's definitely hundreds of miles. I don't know if it would be a third or what it would end or a quarter, but it's a lot. And the road connections are actually kind of choose your own adventure. So as long as you hit the trail segments on Far Out, they kind of give you a suggested route, but you could take a different route. So you could go on a busier highway to get to the next trail segment. As long as you connect the trail segments, you're fine. So
that leads me into maybe the main question I feel like pretty much everyone thinks when they hear about somebody doing an FKT like this is the why. So why did you want to do an FKT on the Ice Age Trail? And why did you want to do it unsupported versus, say, supported or self-supported, since obviously this is going through a lot of populated areas?
The intrigue was, to be honest, it was doing something that, as far as I know, no person had ever done that distance. That was the intrigue. Our Brody kind of set the bar, and then you set the bar, and then I was just kind of looking for options. And yeah, that intrigued me. And then there was nothing else that was a little bit longer than what you did. So the next step on like an actual sort of end-to-end trail, right? The next one did seem to be the Ice Age Trail, but it seemed longer than I wanted. But I just thought it might be possible and I'm going to try.
I will tell you, the entire time I was on the AZT, I was like, why didn't I choose to do the Ice Age Trail? It'd be so much easier than this. Even though it's longer, the trail itself is not as challenging as the 800 miles of the AZT. So yeah, distance is only one factor.
For sure. And people said that initially, they're like, oh, like if you want to do this, why not go do the Arizona Trail? But to be honest, being from Ontario and never being really in the desert, like it's just, I don't know, it's so foreign to me, right? So,
right.
And Wisconsin was something that was so similar to Ontario. It was just the distance that was like, man, this is a big step, you know?
Right.
So, yeah. And I climbed over 80,000 feet. So it actually, like initially with the heavy pack, I was actually surprised at how much climbing I was doing, but I think obviously the pack helped with that. Mm-hmm. So, but it was more climbing than I thought. So,
Yeah, I mean, Wisconsin is relatively hilly. It has like cattle moraines and things like that. So it's not as flat as some areas. When you think of, oh, it's a flat trail, it's hilly, it's rolling.
Yeah, people say it's flat, but they're comparing it to the AT and other things, I think.
Right. Yeah, yeah. It's not mountainous, but it's certainly not flat.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Where I'm born, it's pancake flat. Mm-hmm. Like there's nothing. Mm-hmm. The biggest hill is a garbage dump, so.
Right. Yeah. I grew up just across the lake there in Michigan, and the coast of Michigan is hilly like Wisconsin, but the center of the state is pretty flat. So, yeah, you can just be, you know, a stone's throw away, so to speak, and have a completely different elevation profile. I have so many questions. We probably won't get through them all as somebody else who's done something akin to this. So your pack weight, let's start there, because obviously we've already mentioned the pack weight. Unsupported, you're carrying everything with you. You're out here for a month. How much did your pack weigh when you started?
So it weighed just around 70. Definitely, it was either 70 or slightly above, because I started with one bottle of soda in my water bottle, obviously. So yeah, it was a full 70 pounds. I think the base weight was around 15, and then the food and the liquid was the rest. It's kind of funny, like all winter long, I had this pack that I thought I was going to use. And it's like a 60 liter pack, but it's a pretty big 60 liter pack. And I was like, you got to go light to do this. You got to go light, you know? So I got my food weight down low, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But when I finally got my food and put it in the 60 liter pack, there was like no room for basically anything else. And then I'm like, but that pack is like significantly lighter than the pack I wanted to use.
Uh-huh.
Which the pack I did end up using is just like a pack I train with kind of thing. And it's a 100 liter pack and I didn't want to use it. But I had to use it. So then the base weight went up 2 pounds just because of the bigger pack. And then I decided to bring two pairs of shoes instead of one, because I was like, what if one pair of shoes doesn't cut it? And then the pack weight went up and up. I thought it was going to be maybe a little over 60, and it just ended up being like 70.
Yeah. It's really funny to hear you say that, because the exact same thing happened to me. I had the pack that I was planning to use. I had trained with it all winter. The food was just in it. And then the day before I left for Arizona, I was packing it with everything. And I got down to the end and I was like, I can't get my sleeping bag in here. And I remember talking to somebody just being like, do you think I could just do this without a sleeping bag? Because I was like, it doesn't fit. And I ended up having to borrow a bigger pack from a friend. And then the pack was the wrong size for me. And it led to a whole host of issues. But yeah, it literally got down to the final putting things in there. And then I'm like, oh, this, because my pack was also about 70 pounds when I started. And I'm like, there's just not room in the pack. It doesn't fit.
Yeah, it's tough to squeeze everything in there initially. And then of course, if you could do it in your room, right, at home, mm-hmm. then you get on trail and then things get messy and then it's even worse.
Right. Yeah. So. And you're packing for travel, you know, and everything's kind of portioned out for flying, and then you got to put it all back together. And I had stuff strapped to the outside, and yeah, because everything gets messed up.
I was lucky. I didn't have to fly. I drove.
Oh, well, that's good.
So yeah. I packed all my food at my house. So weighed it out and everything. Yeah.
That's definitely a better way to go than trying to do it all in a hotel room, you know, after you've flown.
I'm just glad the border didn't dig into it. So.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That would be a little bit stressful, having them rifle through. So you mentioned your base weight was 15 pounds?
Yep.
So what kind of gear were you carrying? And maybe just more along the lines of like, how did it differ from, or did it differ from what you would have taken if you were just doing this as a backpacking trip?
I was really looking at, I'd say I made some kind of last minute decisions that kind of saved me too. I definitely looked at the low temps, and there were some in the negative Celsius. And then I decided to bring a kind of like it's a sleeping bag liner, but I use it as a bivy. So I kind of threw that in last minute. It's really light. I think that really helped because, sorry, I'm in Celsius, but there was some -5 Celsius nights. And my sleeping bag was kind of like, yeah, it's kind of borderline. And a couple nights right. I wore all my rain gear and 2 pairs of socks and everything just to stay warm. But yeah, just since it was a month long, I mean, I brought kind of, an inner for the tent and different things like that just to make sure, because bugs could be an issue. So I had to try to cover more ground type of thing that way. And rather than just bring a tarp and the 2 pairs of shoes, that was one of the biggest decisions of could one pair of shoes last that long and be okay and not start hurting my knees and ankles and stuff? So, but other than that, just normal, all the normal stuff. I didn't bring a stove or anything. Just
okay.
Yeah.
Just stoveless.
Tried to go light, but.
What do you think? What's the verdict on the shoes? Do you think you could have made it on one pair, or are you glad you brought the second pair?
I think you can go one pair if you pick the right pair.
Okay.
I think it's got to be something durable, obviously super durable, especially with the road walks. Like when I look at the tread on the shoe under the ball of your foot, those nubs are basically almost gone, a couple of them. So, but the latter part of the trail for me was easier terrain, so I wouldn't be slipping and sliding too much and stuff. So I might have been okay. But as far as the cushioning, that's kind of the X factor too. Like, does that cushioning die out and do you start feeling that more? So as far as the actual shoe, like my shoes actually don't look that bad. Like if I clean them up, they look okay. It's just the bottom of the tread is a little worn. So,
right.
I'd say it could be done.
Yeah.
But it was a risk I wasn't willing to take, because putting in all this work and training all winter and spending all the money and driving out there, and then to like, I just thought like, what if like you didn't finish this thing because of that? And then it's just like, I'd be kicking myself. So I just end up packing heavier just in case.
Yeah, I know Art brought two pairs of shoes when he did the AZT, and I definitely debated it and ultimately wasn't willing to carry the weight. And I only had one pair of shoes and they were very crushed out and the tread was shorn off and they were dead. But, you know, kind of the thing of just knowing that my feet were probably going to be painful toward the end, but that it would probably make it. But that was definitely a consideration and a risk. And it, you know, I was like, this is going to suck if I'm in a lot of pain or I have to abandon this because I didn't want to carry an extra pair of shoes.
Yeah. Well, it's good it worked out for you. I guess anything longer than you would have to go two pairs then.
Right. Yeah, definitely a consideration when you're getting into these longer distances for sure.
Yeah.
Now we've talked a little bit of the gear. So obviously the majority of your pack weight was food. So can we talk about your food, what you were eating, how many calories per day? How you planned your nutrition? Did you have enough food? And all of that.
Yeah, there's a lot of math. Yeah, so the numbers are 4,100 calories a day. And it actually came out to 1.75 pounds per day. So I guess that's on the lighter side, but I just went for as high caloric stuff as I could find and still know I could eat it. So yeah, the meals are pretty simple to run down. I started with these 6 mini chocolate coconut bars for breakfast. Then I had the next meal was salted macadamia nuts with maple glazed almonds mixed together, like my own trail mix. The next meal was 8 sandwich cookies with cream in the middle. So they're like high fat. Next meal was a peanut butter squeezy with chocolate and honey. And then the next two meals were the repeat of the nuts and then the sandwich cookies. And then the last meal was just a meal replacement bar. So it wasn't too exciting, but I was so hungry that anything was good for me. And right. I honestly enjoyed the food and it worked. I was definitely super hungry and super weak in the middle section. I knew I was losing a ton of weight and I just felt so weak. And I would try to eat every 2 hours about. And I would just look at my watch and it'd be like 10 minutes later and I'd just be starving. So, and I know for some people, 4,100 calories sounds like a lot, but I don't know, for me, I lost, like I said, I lost about 20 pounds during, and I just felt so weak, but it was able to work out. I had enough food. I even ate a little more the last day. I had a few extra little meals. Early on, I kind of rationed a couple meals here and there which I usually do. Because I'm never hitting my mileage. So I'm like, oh, I'm going to need more food near the end. So I better save a meal here and there, especially if I feel like I can get away with it, get through the day and save that meal. So I was doing that. Probably also why I felt so weak at some point. But yeah, it was nice to have a couple extra meals the last day. And I ate I didn't have one meal left when I finished. I ate my last meal about 2 hours before the end. I could have finished with a couple of meals, but I just wanted the energy to get to the end. So,
yeah. Right. Obviously, you did a lot of high calorie, like high fat foods. Did you feel like you had an adequate balance of carbs and fat and protein?
Probably not. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd much rather be more carbohydrate based for sure. And I'd rather have more candy and sugars and stuff like that to give me energy. But it was just being so long and thinking that I basically brought 30 days of food. But like I said, I rationed a bit. I know I finished in just under 30 and a half. So, but just being that long, just doing the math of like, okay, well, if I bring 2 pounds a day, 30 times two is 60. And then plus all the others. And I just really wanted to get that down because I know how much the pack just weighs on you and it feels like a piano, as you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just really wanted to get it as light as possible. And I really didn't know how. I knew I'd be weak and I knew I'd lose a lot of weight, but I almost didn't. It's the unknown, right? Like I just didn't know what would happen. And I'm just super blessed that I had enough energy to get to the end.
Yeah, I definitely realized pretty early on I didn't bring enough carbs and sugar. I was definitely struggling with uphills just until my body got used to the fact that like, okay, we're not going to have sugar. But yeah, definitely there's a trade-off to like trying to get the calorie number in the least amount of weight.
I guess the sugars for me always came with fat, like the peanut butter squeezy had honey in it, right? The sandwich right. cookies had sugar in the cream filling, but it's still high fat too. So it was, yeah.
Yeah. I want to talk about things that went wrong because I was reading your detailed trip report and it sounded like there were quite a few things that went wrong, both on just issues with your phone, but also physical issues and weather. I just wonder if you can speak to, I know this was a very long trip, but maybe just the highlights of the things that went wrong. What challenges did you face aside from just the expected, like the pack is heavy and this is a long time to go without being supported?
Yeah, and it's kind of funny because on day one, like I would say 2/3 into the day, it was just the realization was setting in of how hard this was going to be. And I was already, you know, just having those negative thoughts, right? And day two and day three weren't any better. And then I checked the weather on day three. And initially it was kind of like one of those things where you check it before you start. And it's like, oh, it's 10 millimeters of rain. And then a couple of days later, it's 20. And then when I checked it, it was like 40 millimeters of rain. And I was hurting bad. And I was just like, I don't know how I'm going to go out there. And just with everything so wet and I was struggling so bad. So I just decided to take a 0 day, which is completely probably so unconventional. And obviously it's not something I wanted to do. But for me, it was just like, how am I going to survive another day and stay unsupported and just survive? That's it. And stay in the game. And then I had this idea, whether it was brilliant or stupid, it was just like, well, you can take a 0 if you don't eat any food. So I didn't eat any food because I was so behind. Like I was struggling to hit like 30 miles a day, right? And I knew I would have to average way more than that to finish. So yeah, I just decided to 0 in the tent and I fasted basically for like 36 hours. And I just drank one bottle of water with electrolytes in it and just was in and out of consciousness all day long and slept both nights. Then the day after I got going again and I felt a little better. So that was sort of the one big thing. The phone thing was a huge debacle. The phone, I just couldn't get it to stay on for whatever reason. It was just like the biggest fluke thing. And I didn't know where to go. I was at a road section with a T and I didn't know where to go. And I kind of went through all the emotions. I was mad and sad. And then I just accepted it. It was over. And then I walked back into town and then it got back working again. And then I'm like, I was super happy and frustrated, but I don't know. It was kind of neat to go through all that, I guess, because I accepted that it wasn't going to happen. And then I was like super relieved when I was like, okay, I'm still in this, you know? And then I got back going and it added 6 extra miles on, but oh well, bonus miles. And then I'd say the other big thing that happened at the end was my shin just blew up with 5 days left to go. It just got, I don't think I stepped the wrong way. I just think it was like an overuse thing and all the stuff I did with the heavy pack early on. And yeah, I just kind of gave out and it swelled up. And at that point, I was actually thriving and I was thinking, okay, like things are going great now and I may be able to finish this sort of in my goal time and finish really strong and not sleep a lot the last couple nights and all this stuff. And then the trail just said, not today, son. And I just struggled to get to the end. And even the last night, I still didn't even know if I was going to make it. Like I was, the only thing I was doing was elevating my foot on my pack and sleeping like that. And the swelling would go down a little bit, but as soon as it got going, like not too far in, it was just screaming at me. And if I ever stopped, it was just pulsating and it was swelling over top of the sock. And my ankle had about, I would say like a quarter of what it should have in mobility. Like I could barely move it.
Wow.
And I just had to hobble in to the finish. And it's not the finish you picture, right? But it's all good. It's part of the story and I'm glad I overcame it. But it was tough.
Yeah, it sounds like it. A couple follow-up questions to that. So did you ever figure out what happened to your phone? Did it do it again? Or was your phone just completely fine after that?
It was completely fine.
So weird.
It's the weirdest thing. And I've had the phone for a couple years and it's never done anything like that before. And it's such a freak thing. And I went through that town the night before and then I had to do a road walk and then I had to find a spot to sleep. And then, yeah, I ended up hiking 3 miles back to town and then started working again. It was like, I just had to go through all the emotions of like accepting it and everything that it was over. And then it's crazy.
That's one of those bizarre things where you're like, was this just, if I hadn't done that, was I going to get hit by a car on the road or something, you know, is the universe making sure that you're safe by frustrating you? It's just one of those things where you're just like, why did this happen? You know, or yeah, like you said, going through all of those emotions. I mean, that's very human to search for, like, there has to be a meaning. There has to be a reason.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know if it, for me personally, if it was like God seeing how I would react and seeing if I was okay and not mad at him, you know, and I was mad and then I was very sad and frustrated. But then I just said, I'm so lucky to be out here to even attempt this thing. And it didn't work out. It's okay. Life goes on. I have so much in life to look forward to and it's okay. And I just accepted it. And then when I could get back in the game, when my phone turned on, then I was like, okay, like let's go, you know? And like I said, by that point, I'd been struggling a lot before that point, but I woke up that morning feeling good, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's almost like early on, like when I was struggling, if my strap on my pack busted, I probably would have been like, okay, this gets me off of here, you know? Cause I was hurting so bad. And then finally, when something was going to get me off the trail, I was like, no, like not now.
Right.
Yeah. I have hope now, you know? So
yeah. How is your shin now? Do you have any sort of long-term or lingering issues, or is everything kind of healing up now that you're off of it?
Yeah, it's healing up. I still definitely feel it. So I haven't done any real workouts or anything. I'm able to sit on my heels and stretch it now, but it really hurts. Like it's such a noticeable difference than the other one. So it's probably going to take some time, but it was worth it.
Right. Yeah.
It's all worth it. So
aside from the one time with your phone and not knowing which way to go, did you have any sort of navigational issues? Is this trail fairly well marked? I mean, I know you said you just got to choose your own adventure on the roadblocks, but otherwise, is it pretty easy to follow?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, it's pretty well. It's yellow blazed, actually, the trails. So it's pretty well marked. I, of course, as I always do, take wrong turns. It's just something I do. And I just, you know, I try to pull out the phone pretty quick and check just to double check. But on the roads, you really got to check too, because I end up being on my phone a lot because I just didn't want to take any wrong turns and you're constantly checking. And the roads do kind of weird things and you're like, okay, you skip this road and then you take the next one on an angle and then you get there and it doesn't look how it looked on your phone. You know what I mean? It's just different in person. And a couple of times I'd start going down this road and I'd be like, double check. And you certainly didn't want to go way down a road and think you're on the right road.
Right.
And then realize that you messed up. So, but overall the trails are like, I would barely pull my phone on the trail. That was great. And it's just the road section. You just got to make sure you're going the right way. So.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. And do you know about the bifurcation?
I do not.
So yeah, in the middle of the trail, it actually splits two different ways. I think the Florida Trail does that too. And
a lot of trails have that. Yeah.
Yeah, they give you an option. So you can either take the Western bifurcation or the East. And I think the East is about 3 miles longer on Far Out. But I decided there's only one trail segment at the bottom of the Western trail segment, Baraboo. So it's just like, I kind of cut down the middle. So I took a way shorter path in that section and then got to the trail segment. But that day was like, I think it was like I knew it was going to be about a 47 mile road walk, and a lot of it was on busier roads. So, and I had the wind, so that was a little bit brutal.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds brutal.
Yeah. Yeah, the roads are, I mean, you know, you're going to get your mileage in and you're going to be able to do fast miles, which is, it seems good on paper, but when you're actually out there and there's cars going by and you're on the shoulder and the camber of the side of the road, and it kind of wears on you. And yeah, when I was doing a long road section, I was always pretty happy to get back to the trail.
I have a love-hate relationship with road walks as well, because on the one hand, great, it's fast, easy. I mean, obviously in this case, sounds like maybe not quite such straightforward navigation, but generally, you know, you just get on there and you go. But yeah, it's so hard on the body and you have to be alert to the cars. And yeah, it's always a relief to get back on the trail.
Yeah, I'm sure it didn't help maybe that was something that happened to my shin too, just all that road walking on the left side of the road, right? So I will say the Wisconsin drivers were great. The people out there are so nice, and so many people would see me and get over, way over on the other side. So that was really nice. So
that is nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always frustrating to me when I'm on the road and people are just not even moving over even an inch, and just like, okay, there's plenty of room for you to give me a little space.
Yeah. And a lot of people pulling over and asking if I'm okay and if I need anything and stuff like that. I'd always say no, of course. But yeah, the people in Wisconsin were great. So
yeah, I was wondering about people and interactions, because this is not a remote trail. When I did the Arizona Trail and supported, the thing that I found, probably the hardest thing I found, was turning down Trail Magic. I didn't see a lot of people, but there were lots of coolers and water caches. And to have to walk past all of those was the hardest thing. So obviously on this trail, you're probably having people pulling over and asking if you need anything, offering you stuff. You're walking through towns, you're walking past restaurants. Can you speak to that experience and what challenges that presented for you?
Yeah, I will say too, the Northwest is, I don't know, it depends what your definition of remote is, but you're not going through a lot of towns and you don't see a lot of people. So that's definitely like the more gnarly, more technical part of the trail. And people told me about that and they warned me how muddy it would be and stuff, but it wasn't too muddy. I had one day of mud, I would say. As far as like, I never saw anything on the trail. There were no coolers. There was nothing like that. So that wasn't an issue. I had people say, can I get you anything, like driving by? And then I would just say, no, I'm all good, thanks. So that wasn't too big a deal. There was one girl who, from her second floor balcony, like yelled down at me, hey, can I throw you down a beef stick? it was just the most random thing. And I said, no, I'm good. So I guess it wasn't too much of an issue there. And just, there was one guy who pulled over and he just never met a Canadian before. And he invited me to a party that night. And it's just pretty random, but
it seems wild that there's somebody who lives in Wisconsin that's never met a Canadian. It's not that far from Canada.
Yeah, but everybody knows about the Ice Age Trail. They seem really proud. Right. So that's super cool. But yeah, I would say it wasn't like a huge issue turning down anything, because it wasn't offered a ton. Mm. And then just as far as going through town, I mean, you just put your head down and just get through there and just get to the next trail section, and that's it. I will say the Northwest is more remote. And one of the weird things was not seeing anybody for days and days for the most part. And then eventually when I took the bifurcation, I ended up going through this place called Wisconsin Dells. And it's just like a tourist trap type of thing. And it was off season, but it was like it was just so weird going from not going through any real civilization, then all of a sudden walking through this place, which was just like lights and everything. And it just, I don't know, it was kind of sensory overload. So that was interesting.
Yeah. So with not seeing a lot of people, maybe specifically in the Northwest area, but, you know, throughout the trail, because I would imagine that time of year, you're not seeing a lot of people hiking and backpacking either. Were you seeing much in the way of wildlife?
I saw like 1,000 deers or deer.
Right. Yeah. That seems right. Yeah.
Yeah. So there was just deer all over the place every day, dozens of them. It was crazy. No bears. Saw some porcupine. Saw some snakes, some different kind of big birds that make, I don't know, I have to ask my brother what they are, but make weird noises and stuff like that, that I don't know if they're in Ontario, but, but just, yeah, nothing too crazy.
Do you have any issues with ticks or were you too early for ticks?
So I did the permethrin spray. Mm. So I did that beforehand in the hotel the couple of days before, and I only found one tick on my pack.
Mm.
When I stopped and took my pack off once, there was one on my pack. As far as on me, I never found anything.
Mm-hmm.
But people warned me to be careful.
It's very ticky.
Yeah.
That's why I wondered. But
yeah. And I'm Canadian and we can't get the permethrin in Canada. We can't even get it shipped. We've tried. So I just made sure to spray my shoes, socks, pants, shirt and everything with that. And it seemed like it worked, but
yeah, I mean, you were out there a little yeah. earlier and being chilly like that, it's probably good because they can get very, very, very ticky, especially with all those deer.
Yeah. And there was at least two nights where it was -5 Celsius. So I don't know if that kind of kept them at bay too, because I definitely went through some different weather patterns, which was interesting. It kind of was fairly normal in the beginning and then it kind of went into a cold front, where I was kind of worried about the nights because it got so cold. And then the days were actually really nice. Like some days I even kept my rain jacket on all day, but I don't know, I'd rather have that than super hot.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then after the cold front, it went right into a heat wave where I was doing some road walks and then it was 28 Celsius and you're in full sun and there's not a lot of water. And then I kind of struggled with that too. And then then the temp just kind of went back to normal for the finish. So it didn't really have any bugs. There were some early on. And then I think those cold nights just got rid of them. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's convenient. Couple questions about maybe just more practical aspects. So at the very beginning, I asked you about sleep and you said you were getting a lot of sleep. But like, how easy is it to find camping on a trail that has so much road walking, especially on an unsupported effort, because you can't be like, oh, I'll just stay at a hotel in the middle of this road walk.
That's usually a stressful thing, I guess, is now on the trail, it's obviously no worries. Like there's lots of spots to sleep on trail. So that's not an issue at all. I guess that's why my mileage sometimes is all over the place. Like if you look at my mileage, there's some days. There's a day even early on where I did like 49 miles. I didn't want to do 49 miles.
Right.
My pack was still heavy, but I knew I was getting to that trail section. And if I could find a really good spot somewhere on the road, I would have taken it, but I couldn't always find it.
Hmm.
And then the tricky part was too, you might be not even at 40 miles and there's a long road section coming up of 15 miles. And then you're just like, well, let's say you're only at, I don't know, 37 miles. Like, do I want to stop here and know that I have a safe spot? Or am I going to risk it? Because I don't want to hike another 50 miles and it's late at night and not find a spot. And then too, I don't want to get woken up.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's kind of my worst fear, which has happened to me in the past before in Ontario once. So it's just knowing that no one could see me. If I was on a road section, like a couple of times there was state land, I got lucky and I'm hiking down the road and there was a sign that said this state land and no one's around and no one saw me. And I just beelined it into the bush and set up and that's it. But it's definitely tricky. It's tricky to say like, oh, I'm going to do 40 miles per day because it's sometimes just not feasible.
Yeah, I would imagine that would be a huge challenge and be very stressful because, yeah, you are having to adapt your mileage to availability of camping. Whereas, you know, if you weren't doing an unsupported effort, I feel like you're just like, oh, well, whatever, there's a hotel along this roadwalk or whatever, or campground, you can stay. But when you're in this sort of a situation, it's just like, okay, yeah, stop short, push long, hope you find state land, you know,
yeah,
sleep in the ditch along the highway. I've done that, you know, and then you don't get good sleep and not ideal.
And some of the road sections are so different too, where you're going and it's just all farmland and there's nowhere to go. Like you're just exposed.
Right.
And then there's other spots where it's during the day, you're doing a road walk and you're like, well, this would be great if I hit this at night because there's bush everywhere and there's no signage of no trespassing. And you're like, this would be good. But definitely before I did the bifurcation, I did way longer day to kind of to get to a trail section, which it wasn't good. So I had to keep going and find a spot in the road. But then yeah, I did more of the one day and then I knew the bifurcation would be a huge day, but then I could get to the trail. So it was also like not just planning that day. It was like the next day too.
Right.
Yeah.
What was your like biggest takeaway from this? Did you get from it what you were expecting? Did you get more? What do you walk away from this experience with?
Yeah, so much. It's so life-changing. I mean, doing something that you truly don't know if you can do it. And then just going through so much and just finding a way to, it was kind of like, just give yourself another day, another chance, just survive another day. That was just my motto. My motto before has been like, just keep showing up. And this time it wasn't, I'll even keep showing up. It was just keep surviving, especially early on. And it would have been so easy to throw in the towel early on when I was struggling. And I almost convinced myself too. I wrote this in my report that I was kind of like, okay, this isn't in the cards for me. It's not going to happen. You're so far behind. But I'm kind of stuck. My car's on the other side of the state. I got to get back. I did have a girl who said she would kind of possibly bail me out, but she was far away and I still wanted to get closer to her so she wouldn't have to drive as far. So I was just like, just even get halfway through the trail. And if you know it's not going to work, then you can bail. And then, oh, well, at least you tried.
Right.
And then at some point, if you just keep surviving, then maybe one day you would just end up feeling a little better and a little better. And you're like, oh, maybe there's a chance. So it's amazing what can happen if you don't throw in the towel and just no matter how bad it is, you know?
Right.
And it might not always work out, but you have an opportunity to possibly do this. And it's amazing how things can turn around quick. Like things can be so bad and then they can get pretty good. It was always hard, of course, but like, you know, certainly at one point later on, it wasn't bad enough to throw in the towel. And then I was like, okay, like you can always slip on a banana peel. Something can always happen, but I have a good chance now if I just, you know, keep going. So,
yeah.
And just the other thing I'll say too, is just the, I always call it like unsupported support. just having the support, my wife, Chantal, she's so great. I always call her when I'm in trouble. She always gives the best advice, even though I kind of sometimes know it. It's just like, I have to hear it. So that's huge. And having people there at the end, like my Wisconsin family who like helped me out beforehand, Lisa, Chuck, Luann, like they were so awesome. They met me at the end and like brought me food and stuff. And it was just like I was okay. I just wanted to finish. So if I got there and no one was there, like whatever, but like, it was so cool having people there who cared and were part of the journey, obviously before and after, but it meant so much more. So I'm like just super grateful. And yeah, it was a crazy month and it's a month I'll never forget. And I'm so glad I did it.
I'm really appreciative of you making the time to come on the show today and share this with us. It was really great chatting with you.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks again, Jameson, for coming on the show. You can read about his FKTs on the website, fastestknowntime.com.